Hare Krishna, welcome back. Glad to see you all here. Vrinda, GGSD, what does that stand for? The Guru of San Diego in Manjesh, who said this may be his last night. Oh no, we're going to miss you. And Kremlin, Vrinda, who else? Bhakti and Carol. And others, too numerous to mention. So, I have a question for everyone. The article that we've been reading is called Who Are You Offending? Of course, we haven't read it in the last 2 weeks, but did anybody out there offend anybody this week? Let's fess up. Has anyone committed any offenses to other Vaishnavas this week? Let's see. If no one says they have, that would be amazing. Manjesh says, well, he didn't offend any devotees. That's good. One way not to offend devotees is don't see them. Then you won't offend them. Sometimes devotees do that. Say, I'm leaving the association of devotees because... Yeah, that's what Manjesh did. He didn't see him, so he had no chance of offending him. That's the strategy. So Kremlin says, probably in word and deed. That's interesting. Of course, you know, Kremlin, you know the definition of no illicit sex that Prabhupada gives? He says, no illicit sex means you don't talk about sex, you don't think about it, you don't plan for it, and you don't do it. That's the strict definition. So the strict definition of non-offending devotees would be not only do we not say anything, but we don't think it. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, when he gave that definition, he said, well, we say no illicit sex, so that means at least we don't do it because we can't always prevent ourselves from thinking about it. But as we know, when we think about something which is sinful, it has an effect on us. So ideally, we want to come to the point where we don't offend devotees, even in our mind. But at least if we offend them in our mind and we control our tongues, that's better. That's progress. Okay. So it looks like you all had a pretty good week because Kremlin only got close by thinking. Of course, maybe you're all not admitting it. But Brenda Lee's with us. Radharadya. Radharadya. Amazing. Okay. So last week I promised we were going to speak about something, and I wonder if you remember what it was. Should I give you a hint? Does anyone remember what I promised we would speak about? It was only a week ago. Now, let me see. Do I remember? Because it's more important I remember than you remember, right? Brenda Lee, can't hear the broadcast. Kremlin, we were going to talk about Kung Fu, yes. How to protect yourself from offending devotees. No, we're going to talk about how to deal with devotees who are offensive. Sort of. So why can't Brenda Lee hear the broadcast? So I said we had a very important thing to talk about, and we've been, you know, I've been telling you how to behave, the attitude that will prevent you from committing offenses, how to deal nicely with devotees, how to serve them, how to please them, and so on and so on and so forth. Okay, so then natural question arises. Someone could say, but if I take this very humble attitude and this very subservient attitude, or this attitude of see the good, only see the bad in myself, don't see the bad in others, that could be a recipe for me to be controlled and power-hungry people to control me. And secondly, when these power-hungry people or these people who are not self-disciplined misbehave, because Mahatma said, only see the good, don't see the bad, then I'll put blinders on my eyes, I'll deny what I'm seeing, and I won't say anything. And then other people may be harmed. I may be harmed. So that argument's given. Is that a good argument? Do you ever think, any of you, ever think like that? That, you know, I'll be taken advantage of. And what to speak, if somebody is doing something wrong, others will be taken advantage of. It's not fair. So, anyway, that's an important point to discuss, I think. Don't you? Is that an important point? Yes. Okay, now I'm going to tell a story because this story illustrates how to deal in this situation, at least one way to deal. In one of our temples, back in the time of Srila Prabhupada, one of the leaders was breaking some of the principles. Not the principle you think he was breaking, but another one. Which was the no meat eating principle in the temple. And other forms of deviation were going on. And as you could imagine, it was creating havoc. And not all the devotees knew how to deal with it. And some didn't say anything, and some didn't say anything right away, and some spoke out later. And when it finally came to Prabhupada, they asked, well, was it better we didn't speak out, or better we speak out? Or I don't even know if they asked that, but he made this comment. He said, well, you know, in a situation like that, you could feel like just leaving the temple because it was so bad. A leader was doing this. And the Prabhupada said it was good that the devotees stayed and remained steady in their service despite this situation, because the temple had to be maintained. And if they all would have left, the temple would have fallen apart. The deity worship would have been difficult to maintain, at least maintain to the proper standard. And then Prabhupada said that it was the duty of the leaders to speak out. So this indicates two things, that sometimes the best attitude may be to be quiet, and sometimes, and specifically according to one's position, it may be improper, or we could say even offensive, not to speak out. And there's one thing that I learned as an early as a young devotee, and it is said that if a devotee is attacked physically, and we could say verbally also, he doesn't defend himself. But when another devotee is attacked, he defends that devotee. So I think that's a good way to look at this situation. If someone is misbehaving and it is hurting other devotees, we should do something, or we should find somebody or tell somebody who can do something. If someone is attacking me, that it may or may not be proper to defend myself unless other people are in danger. Maybe that's one way of looking at it. Okay. So, you know, it's a sensitive issue. You see something wrong, but then the question could be asked, well, is what I'm seeing actually wrong, or is that just the way I'm seeing it? And it's not wrong. And because I am envious or jealous or a fault finder, that's just the way I see it. Well, that's a good question. And who's the best person to answer that question? You might be the best person to answer that. Or someone who knows you well might be the best person to answer that. So that's always a good question to ask. If you see something that you think you should speak out against, well, am I actually seeing what I'm seeing? Or do I think I'm seeing? Or is it just my envy or jealousy that's making me think this is what I'm seeing? One time Prabhupada said something which could disrupt people's minds, who feel that people can take advantage of us if we're too humble. He said, if something is wrong, I should think it's my fault. If something is wrong, I should think it's my fault. So what does that mean? What if it's not my fault? Well, as Mother Teresa said, when asked what's wrong with the world, what's wrong with the world is that I'm a sinner. So I think Prabhupada meant something similar. What's wrong is that I'm not a pure devotee. It's my fault. Whatever is bad is my fault because I'm not Krishna conscious. So that's one way of looking at it. And it's also, I think Prabhupada also meant it's my fault because I could make it better. So sometimes we might fault someone, but are we any better, or can we make things better? You know, we may fault someone and say, am I any better than the person I'm faulting? Or fault a situation? Is there anything I can do about it other than just find fault with it? So there's another attitude we can adopt. Another attitude, which is very, very powerful, is that to be more empathetic with a person who we see the fault in. And why are they acting this way? What are they going through? Are they having personal problems? Or, you know, what situations have they come from? How are they being treated by others? I remember I was a temple president when I was only 20 years old. And I remember I was very heavy, very strict, very demanding. And that's not my nature. But I was trained by a temple president who was very strict, very demanding, very heavy. So that's how I was. So sometimes we need to look at somebody and say, is there some reason they're acting that way that I'm not aware of? Is somebody telling them to act that way? Is that the only way they know how to act? So you empathize with them, and then you may even go a step further and think, what's this person going through? He must be in a difficult situation. If I were in that situation, would I possibly act in the same way? So it's, you know, it's very powerful when you feel the tendency to criticize it. You're not sure if you actually should, if it's going to be beneficial, or you're not actually sure you're seeing what you think you're seeing, or what's happening is really what appears to be happening is really happening. You can ask that question. You can probe into what is going on here. Is it possible this person could act in another way? Would I act in the same way if I was in his situation? Is that a possibility? Of course, often we think, no, I wouldn't act that way. I'm not that stupid. But we should ask that and think, well, maybe I could act that way. And that's what it means to be compassionate, you know. And then if you sympathize with difficulties people are going through that may cause them to act in a certain way. Now, having said all that, it doesn't mean that people don't do wrong things, and it doesn't mean that sometimes you need to speak out, and it doesn't mean you have your boundaries and people need to know that. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that we become offensive when we establish our boundaries, or we become offensive when we have to call a spade, as the saying goes. And I don't know what that saying, why that saying means what it means. Does anybody know? Call a spade, where that came from? Anybody out there? Call a spade. What does it just mean? When you're playing cards, if it's a spade, you got to call it. Can't hide it. Yeah, probably. I don't know. There must be some story behind it. So that's a general argument. You know, you have to call a spade, otherwise that person will exploit others, will take advantage of others, and so forth. Yeah, so that may be true, or sometimes it is true, not maybe, that is often true. But, what's the but? What we're learning to have a certain mentality, a certain attitude, which is not offensive, even if we have to point out a fault. So you can be non-offensive and point out a fault. You can be offensive and point out a fault. You can be offensive and not even point out a fault. Think about that one. Okay, Manja says, to call a spade is to speak honestly and directly about a topic, specifically topics that others may avoid speaking about due to their sensitivity. Yeah. I know what it means. I was just wondering where it came from. You're like, a spade, why don't they say, call a dog? Now, there must be some reason there. Prema Sindhu, wow. So, now, does anybody have any questions on that? Who to call a spade and who not to call a spade? I'm going to tell you something about that. Something that I noticed, which is very, very telling. I know certain devotees who are always glorifying other devotees. Particularly, they're appreciating other devotees. And whenever I'm with these devotees, they're always telling me about these other devotees and how they're so wonderful and how they're so good at what they're doing and they're so creative and they're so devotional and they're so sincere and they're so intelligent, and they just go on and on and on and on. And as you know, sometimes when with certain devotees, they'll tell you the opposite about devotees, how they're, this devotee is proud and this devotee is unkind and this devotee is this and that. And so I began thinking about the devotee who was always appreciating, because generally we don't see a devotee who's always appreciating. We see devotees who will appreciate sometimes and sometimes they won't. So I was wondering, thinking, why does he do this? What's going on? And then I began to realize, I thought that the reason he does that is that he has all those good qualities and he's actually seeing himself in the other devotees. Because he has those qualities, when he sees the other, he tends to see those qualities in them, or at least give them the benefit of the doubt that that's where they're coming from. Bhakti and Carol said, I heard the difference in whether whether the intention is to criticize or to help. Yeah, exactly. That goes back to the other subject. You know, if you want to help the situation or you just want to criticize. So then, going back to the point I just made, if the devotee who is always appreciating, if he must be seeing the good in others, the good in himself to be seeing the good in others, then of course the converse is true. That if one is always criticizing, then one must be seeing himself or the bad in himself in others. And often when we criticize, it's because it's very painful for us to acknowledge what is wrong with ourselves. Have any of you ever had that realization? That to look at your own fault is painful? And if you know you have a fault and you would rather forget that you had a fault because it's too painful to deal with, because it's so bad, or you don't know how to deal with it. Yes, Bhakti and Carol says, yes, she's had that experience. So one of the ways we deal with that is if we find that fault in someone else, it seems to distract us from our own fault, and it seems to relieve the pain of our own fault, or having to deal with our own fault, or I should say having to in the first place acknowledge it. So if I see it in another person, I don't have to acknowledge it in myself. Although we should note that if I'm seeing it in the other person, that likely means I have it in myself and I don't want to acknowledge it. So what's the solution? What's the remedy? Well, I think it's good for all of us to celebrate our successes, particularly our successes in bhakti. Why not appreciate whatever is good about you? That you've done some wonderful service, that you're a sincere devotee, that you are good at something, that you help other devotees, that you're a helpful person, whatever qualities you have. Take note of them in yourself. Maybe, just maybe, you might start to see those qualities in others. That's one option. Second option is the negative qualities or the faults, the anarthas, that you make an effort to see them in your own heart and deal with them. And therefore, by working on them and improving yourself, you will be less inclined to fault others. Now, we had many, many classes in which we showed the disastrous effects of Vaishnava Aparadha. And I just want to read another disastrous effect. It's from this paper, and this is the last page, so you don't bother to print it out. I mean, we've read this whole article. This article is called Who Are You Offending? It's on my website, tstrain.com/newsletters. And you go to the website, you can get the article, you can read it. And this is the article we've been reading since we started this class 9 classes ago, and it's only 4 pages, and we haven't even finished. But I wanted to read this paragraph. This is on the last page if you're reading along. I know a lot of you must already have it. And on the last page, there is a subtitle called Losing All Good Fortune. So now, I basically what I'm doing now here is taking off from the talk I just had about what you get from offending. And this paragraph talks a little bit about it. Very interesting, so pay attention. It's not uncommon, this is called Losing All Good Fortune, it's not uncommon that one's material opulence and good fortune are destroyed by offending a great personality. I mean, that's the statement of Bhagavatam. If you offend a great personality, your wealth, your duration of life, good fortune, becomes destroyed. Not only that, by criticizing another person, you take on some of their bad karma and give them some of your good karma. Yet also, the fault you are finding comes back to haunt you. So if you are feeling magnanimous and want to accept some bad karma and give some of your good karma away, you know exactly how to do it. I just told you. Okay, is anybody feeling charitable tonight? Because if you are, go out and offend somebody and you'll absorb some of their bad karma and give them some of your good karma. And that would be great charity to give. Right? Is that a good idea? Should we all just end the class here and go find someone and offend them? And we can help them advance in Krishna consciousness? So, you know, if we analyze criticizing coming from the mode of being critical, not coming from the mode of helping, we are not going to find anything beneficial, which is a sobering thought. But we'll find it is very detrimental, and this obviously is a big way. I believe this comes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the other example I just gave here, not only do you give them your good karma and get their bad karma, but you also take on the fault. So let's say even you didn't have the fault, it is said you take on the fault of the person you're criticizing. Any of you ever had that experience? How? Premasinda is wondering how it happens. It's too subtle to understand. Give a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Carol's asking. I believe that's in the story of Prahlad Maharaj. When Prahlad Maharaj's father was offending him, and what happened when he offended him? He lost everything. And so in there, Prabhupada explains, when you offend a great personality, you lose everything. I mean, Bhakti and Carol look at it this way. You gain everything by serving a great personality. You get mercy, you get their blessings. It said, just by thinking of the great personality, you imbibe their quality. So conversely, think of the bad qualities. Well, conversely, offend a great personality and get the opposite result. And the Premasinda, you could say, meditate on the bad qualities of a person. If you by meditating on the qualities of a pure devotee, you imbibe their qualities, and meditating on the qualities of a lowly person, you gradually begin to imbibe their qualities. I think it's a divine arrangement that Krishna does just because we deserve it. When we criticize someone, oh, you always do this, and then we start doing it. It must be some subtle karmic reaction that whatever fault we find, we become infested by the fault. So the question is, have any of you ever experienced that? Where you found some fault with someone and you ended up acting in the same way? Or told somebody, you're stupid, you always do this. And then you do it. You ever done that? Admit it. Yeah, I think Krishna arranges that to happen more often when you're married, and And you get upset with your spouse and say, why did you do this? That's so stupid. And then you end up doing it. Get the reaction. You know, I think it's also the example. It's not the example that, another reason Prabhupada gives this example, but he gives the example that there's wet stool and there's dry stool, you know, cow dung. And the wet stool's laughing at the dry stool, oh, you're all dried up. Yeah, and then the wet stool eventually becomes dried up anyway. So I think it's a nice reward. It's a nice reward for being critical. Just to get some of those person's qualities, particularly not the good ones, but the bad ones, the ones you're criticizing, get them yourself. I mean, I've seen it. In my own life, I've seen it in the life of others. The very thing they're criticizing is the thing they do. You might see that with politicians also. Okay. Now, we're seeing somebody's faults, getting some kind of perverted happiness or pleasure, but it has no positive effect on our consciousness. It only has a negative effect. There's no positive effect on our Krishna consciousness. So it's self-destructive. Now, this brings up another point, self-destructive. Why do we sometimes do things which are self-destructive? Okay, I better answer another question. The ocean of love is asking, while it is best to look at others' good qualities, we may risk the danger of not seeing the whole picture. Like someone may have good sadhana and be proud. Shouldn't we see both sides? Well, we were just talking about that, but we were saying you should only see the negative side if other people are in danger. Because why would you want to see their pride? I don't know why you want to see it, unless they're misusing that and they need to be corrected. But otherwise, if their peers, I mean, if you are instructing them, yeah, you may want to notice that they're proud and correct them. But if they're just peers or superiors and you see they're proud, that generally will be destructive for you. Especially because Krishna says, apichet sudra charo bhajante mam mananyabak sadureva samantavyak samyagvivashtito hisa, see the good in any of my sincere devotees. And know that that pride very soon will become purified because he's engaged wholly and solely in my service. So, Krishna's basically instructing us not to see the negative, but to see the positive. Unless, of course, as I said, that positive is destructive. So that's Krishna's injunction. Now, when you're doing business, yeah, you should see the good and the bad. And when you're dealing practically, you should see the good and the bad in every situation. But we're dealing with devotees, we want to develop a positive attitude. And, you know, if it's going to be hard to develop a positive attitude if you're thinking, well, okay, these are his good qualities, let's find his bad ones. You think that's a bad one? Hey, Prabhu, do you think that's a bad one or a good one? You know, it's not the way, you know, I saw, you know, he did this. Is that good or bad? I don't know. Let's see. Is that, you know, that's not the way we're taught to deal with devotees, to analyze. You know, we're taught to see the good as far as possible. Whatever good is there. It doesn't have to be a lot of good to see the good. You can, sometimes you may not see good, but you see behind what looks like bad, you see sincerity in a person struggling to try to be good. And that's certainly what Prabhupada saw in us. I mean, look at us. Prabhupada could have seen the worst things in us as new devotees. But he always encouraged us. Always encouraged us. Right from the beginning, he encouraged us. I'm very pleased that you're doing this. I'm very pleased that you're doing that. So what was he encouraging? He was encouraging the sincerity. He saw that. And that's, you know, if you want to encourage other devotees, you need to see their sincerity. You need to see the good in them. And then what I think is really good, which we could all do, and this will actually bring this teaching into something practical. Whatever you see any devotee do anything good, compliment them. Say, oh, Prabhu, that was such a nice class, or that was such a nice kirtan, or that offering you cooked was great, or that Arti, you're a really good pujari, or you organized that program, and just thank you for organizing that. You're a really good organizer, you know. To try to be that kind of person who wherever you go, whoever you contact, people are encouraged. And so you could understand, to be able to do that, you have to have the right attitude. You don't want to go around and say, Prabhu, you're proud. Prabhu, you're lazy. Prabhu, you're distracted. That's not going to help you. It's not going to help them. But you want to be an encouraging force. Oh, Prabhu, you gave a lecture. You know, you're really good. I think you really should pursue this. You know, you could be in colleges giving talks. I was impressed. So, you know, you give the person confidence. And it helps you and it helps them. And it doesn't help you or them when you're criticizing, less than in rare situations where bad behavior has to be stopped. So, you know, there was a guy who told a story. This is really cool. And you can try this with kids. He would always do this when he'd see kids. He'd go up to, you know, he'd be around somewhere where there was a kid within an eye shot of him. And he'd go up to the kid, particularly if the parents knew him, he'd go up to the kid and said, he'd point at him and say, I saw you from a mile away. You're a winner. I could see that. You're a winner. No question, you're a winner. And then he'd get and say, tell me, say I'm a winner. Yeah, and the kid would say, I'm a winner. And he'd go, you sure are. I mean, I can tell a winner when I see, I'm good at this. I know. I can see a winner from a mile away. And I mean, I wouldn't tell you this if you weren't a winner. So just like encourage him. And he said it would have phenomenal effects on the children. And the children would go around and say, yes, I'm a winner. I can. And, you know, if you study Prabhupada's letters, you'll see he did that so much with us. You know, even though it's his duty to find our faults, that wasn't the prominent thing. It was that he didn't find our faults. You know, we'd have to do something pretty bad before he would criticize us, generally. I mean, unless you are working with him on a daily basis. But for the massive devotees, you'd have to do something, you know, pretty bad before you were going to get criticized or chastised. But generally, it's giving us this, I'm very happy, I'm very pleased with you, continue, you're the right person for this, Krishna's giving you intelligence. But all these very encouraging things. So if we could be that way with other devotees, then we'd be empowering everyone that we contact. It's really a nice meditation. You know, how can I encourage other devotees? And then what that does is it forces us to see the good, and so that helps us. It helps us tremendously. And then we're following Krishna's instruction in the Gita, that even if he's sudaracharo, if he acts, if his behavior is improper, still sadhu eva samantavya. You consider him a sadhu because he's ananya bhak. He's exclusively, without anything else, my devotee. He doesn't want to go to the higher planets. He doesn't want to worship the demigods. He doesn't want gyan, yoga. He just wants me. So if we can see that way, oh, that's the essence, and here's the sincerity of the devotee. How can I, as we often say, fan the spark? So there's a little sincerity, fan it more. So, you know, if you go out of your way to compliment devotees, it's good for everybody. You know, could you imagine in a temple where we had competition who could compliment others the most? Of course, you might say, well, that would be artificial because everybody would just be saying nice things that they didn't mean. That might be true, but at the same time, it might be so pleasing and nice that it could develop a whole new culture. The culture of praise. What is there something good I can say about others? What can I appreciate? And then, what can I appreciate about the devotees I have trouble with? Or the devotee that really hurt me? Or the devotee I don't like, what can I appreciate about them? That takes even more of a spirit, proper spirit, and more courage. But it's very, very effective. It's very, very powerful. You know, I was just giving the seminar, and I was saying this weekend, well, I was actually saying at the Sunday feast, you know, it's easy to love somebody who's a relative, but it's not easy to love someone who doesn't like you. So, to see the good in someone you don't like, or someone who you feel has a lot of faults, rightly or wrongly, you feel that way, to see the good in them, that's not easy. But if you can see it and encourage it, that helps them. And it helps you. Because now you'll be the nectar. You'll be the nectar seeker. What did Prabhupada say? The bee goes for the honey. And the stool. The fly goes for the stool. Okay. The ocean of love says, I see your point, but what if it affects the movement in a certain way because of certain not so desirable qualities? Yeah. Yeah, that's what we were talking about before you came. We mentioned that exact point. Yeah, if it's hurting others, yeah, then you have to. In other words, you're not seeing it because you're seeing your own fault in them, and you're not being a fault finder. You're not jealous. You're just seeing a person hurting another person, and because that person is in a position of authority, oftentimes they have a lot of power to hurt, and then you can say something. And you're not saying it because you're critical. You're saying it because you want to resolve a problem. Yeah, that's fine. I don't think that's generally the situation. I think generally the situation is we just like to find fault. And so I'm addressing it from that point of view. I mean, a lot of times when we talk about these things, we're talking about in a general way. And there's always specifics. That's for sure. Okay. Welcome, Catherine. Now, it's very easy to find fault. I mean, here's another meditation. We all know it's easy to find fault. And we all know it's not always easy to praise. It's not always easy to see the good. Especially to see the good in someone who's hurt you. It's very difficult. Sometimes you can't. You don't see any good. You just, you know, if a person hurts you, how could there be any good in a person who hurts you? It's a tongue twister. How can there be any good in a person who hurts you? Sometimes we feel like that. So, you know, that's when Krishna consciousness, that's like the real test. You know, like sometimes we're in devotional service and everything is blissful. But the real test is, oh, this person has hurt me and I have to maintain a proper attitude towards them. That's the test. That's difficult. And that's why a lot of times when we run into those situations, we feel justified in offending them because we were hurt. Anyone ever felt that way? Well, I'm justified because this person hurt me, so now I'm going to say nasty things about them. We could just easily say, well, I guess he was just having a hard day, and I really feel sorry for him, and he probably didn't mean it. You could say that also, right? Or you could criticize him and say, and someone say, why are you criticizing? You shouldn't. And you could say, well, he deserves to be criticized. Look what he did to me. You could say that also. So, and that's the problem, is that's what we tend to say. But my point is the real test, or the greater test, or the more difficult test, is to be able to see the positive in a person that has hurt you, in a person you dislike. It's not hard to see the positive in those you like. You don't criticize those you like generally. You criticize those you don't like. So see the good in those you like. It's very powerful. And how it's powerful is it elevates your consciousness. And you feel very, very peaceful. Because we never feel peaceful when we're criticizing. So if there's someone, like right now, think of somebody who just bothers you a little bit or a lot. Or someone you'd rather not, like when you see them, like a devotee, when you see them, you kind of feel like, I hope they don't see me. I don't want to talk to them. I don't like them. If there's anybody like that, that you feel that way towards, and now you think of that person in your mind and think of something good about them, changes your consciousness immediately. Or you think, that person, they must be going through some difficulties, or that person, they're just like me. They're just trying to be Krishna consciousness. They're also struggling. They just want to be peaceful. They want to serve Prabhupada. It elevates your consciousness off this other level of fault finding. Because fault finding is a very low level. It's an extremely low level of consciousness. And appreciation is a high level of consciousness. And we know, in a high level of consciousness, we feel, what do we feel? We feel peaceful, we feel satisfied, because it's sattva-gun. A fault finding is passion, or maybe it's ignorance, I don't know. I think it's both. And so when we're in passion or ignorance, our heart's disrupted. But when we come to goodness, we feel peaceful. And in goodness, then what can we do? Then we can chant peacefully, and we can hear the holy name. So it's important to be in goodness, and fault finding pulls us out of goodness. And as soon as we fault find, we just, you know, the heart is disrupted. We don't feel good. Anyone experience that? Anyone ever? You're going to say, hey, I feel good when I fault find. It's like the highlight of my day, you know. But that's really not true. Because if instead of fault finding, you did something like praise the good qualities or appreciate the good qualities of that devotee, you'd feel much better. Your heart would be peaceful. Because you'd be situated in sattva-gun. And it's a challenge. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, when I face problems or I face challenges, I relish it. I take it as my happiness in Krishna's service. So, you know, you could take it as a service. So my service is to praise other devotees. My service is to encourage other devotees. My service is to see the good in others and let them know I've seen it. Rather than my service is this, to see the bad in others and let them know what I'm seeing. Of course, then you become the charitable donor of your good karma and the worthy recipient of their bad karma and the worthy recipient of the award of the fault which you just found in them. So I think you get my point. It's not, you know, in the general course of events, this is the best way for them and the best way for us. Okay, Kremlin says, I often have to separate people from the group. That is, I like Mormon people but don't care for the doctrinal theses. Yeah, that's also good. That's a good way of looking at it. You might have to separate the people from the things you don't like about them, from the things you like about them. Yeah, I like that. That's a good one. Let's give Kremlin a big round of applause. Hoodie bowl. Kremlin, you get 5 gold stars for that statement. I love that. You know, like Prabhupada said, hate the sin, not the sinner. So that's also separating the person from the sin they commit. So, you know, love the Mormon, not their philosophy. That's a good one, right? Should I put that on my website? Love the Mormon, not the philosophy? They might get upset. Maybe I shouldn't. But your point is well taken. Yeah, if there's something you don't like about a person or something they adhere to or a belief or whatever, you can separate that from what's good about them and appreciate and acknowledge that. Also, because as we advance, if we're helping people, if we're acknowledging the good, then as they maximize the good, they'll begin to transcend or purify, or at least purify the bad, if not transcend it. So this is the mode of goodness. Kremlin spent 2 years at BYU as a grad student. Yeah, so you must have met many nice Mormons and made friends. Yeah. And they probably liked you and didn't like your philosophy, but you could still remain friends. This could be the, you know, this philosophy could save the world, you know. I don't like the Al-Qaeda philosophy, but maybe if you get to know Osama, he may be a fun guy to hang out with. You know, you could play cowboys and Indians with them or something, like play army with them. You know, he might be good at that. When I was a kid, we used to play army, get our guns. And so, is this, so Bhakti and Carol saying, is this the mode of goodness? I would say so. Yeah, I was just reading yesterday, and Prabhupada said, he said, material life means attachment to the mode of passion and ignorance. Enjoying through passion and ignorance, attachment to the things of passion and ignorance. We're actually attached to them. We're drawn to them. And he said the symptom of the mode of goodness is that you're always happy. If someone's in the mode of goodness, they're always happy. Nityananda, always blissful. So, you know, one way of understanding what mode you're in is how you feel, how your actions make you feel. And I would say, you know, what Kremlin is saying is by those actions or by that vision, you would naturally feel good as opposed to just being critical. You know, sometimes we're critical. Dr. Greg finally made it. Hare Krishna. Down to the line here. What was I saying? Oh, yes. Now, you know, another nice question that comes up, but no one's brought it up, so I'll bring it up. It's that, you know, in Prabhupada's books, he's criticizing mudhas, they work like asses. Foolish people believe this. Foolish people think this way. They have no intelligence and so forth. So, he's a pure devotee. Why is he criticizing everybody? And they asked Prabhupada that question. He said, actually, I'm not criticizing. He said, I'm just repeating Krishna's words. Krishna said, there are four kinds of people that don't surrender. Fools, mudhas, people whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, you know, the speculators, the academics. So he said, I'm just repeating. And it, basically what it's doing is it's edifying. This is the mentality of those who will never surrender to Krishna. So the problem is, or the problem was, I don't know if it still is, it probably is still a problem. The problem is not. When Prabhupada spoke that way, the problem wasn't that he was inimical to anybody, that he had any axe to grind personally. But the problem is, for us, often, when we would make those same points or speak those same verses, we would feel some animosity towards those less intelligent people. And so it wouldn't come across the same. We would feel... some kind of repulsion for a person who acted that way or thought that way. And Prabhupada wasn't feeling repulsion. He was just explaining, this is the mentality and activity of one who is Krishna conscious, who surrenders to Krishna, and here's the mentality and activities of those who are not. And therefore, don't be like the person who is not Krishna conscious. Be of the behavior and attitude of the person who is. And so we can distinguish it very clearly. You know, is this Krishna conscious activity or is it not? No, Krishna says this is this person's a mudha, an ass. Is that good that I'm working 15 hours a day to make money? Well, Prabhupada's criticizing people who do that. They're asses. So I guess that's not good. I just read today Prabhupada said, you shouldn't work more than 8 hours a day. Interesting. So then there's the mudha. I guess if you work 8 hours in 1 minute, you're a mudha. As long as you don't go over the 8 hours, you're not a mudha. Officially. An official mudha. Mudha, for those of you who don't know, is mudha's Sanskrit for ass. Okay, now they're asking about correcting junior devotees. PK Das Male. We'll just call you PK Das for short. Okay. Oh yeah, Chaitanya Charitamrita says don't praise or blame, but that's another. That's to keep you off the duality of the world, because praise and blame is part of the duality of this world. But for a devotee, we are meant to praise other devotees. That's part of the process. Praise and blame means, hey, that's a good car. That's a bad car. So it's wet stool, dry stool, because Krishna Das saying everything in the material world is it's false. So now I'm praising something false, I'm blaming something false. We want to transcend praise and blame, but praising devotees is different. So the question, if we have to correct our junior devotees, we have to tell them they're false. Okay, is that good or bad? Now, so you're basically stating that, well, that's a duty. You know, this might be your service to do that. That's a little different thing, but You know, one of the recommendations is if you ever have to find someone's fault, find a good quality to praise before you find the fault. And then, you know, there's a difference between finding a junior's fault and being a tyrant. And calling people fools and unintelligent and so forth. Now, I think would be wise, if you have to find someone's fault, to, before you find their fault, at some point in time, if you realize, well, this person's going to be under my charge, I'm going to have to find a fault. And you might feel that because they're sensitive, they may not appreciate it or may have a negative effect. And you don't want it to have a negative effect. What's the point? Even if they have a fault, if it has a negative effect, they may just go away or become more discouraged. So if you can explain the value in another person finding your fault, finding out your faults, because that way you can improve. And that person, as Bhaktisiddhanta says, is actually your friend. And so if you explain that and say, I'm just being your friend by doing this, and I feel like if I don't, then I'm doing you more harm than good by being silent. So if you create or establish that relationship, then it'll be better, it'll be easier, and it's important that that person accepts it in a positive way. And hopefully they would if you explain that. Now, as we know, Bhaktisiddhanta said, if someone finds my faults, he's my friend. If he praises me, he's my enemy. Meaning that if he praises me, I'll become proud. If he finds my faults, I'll be able to improve myself. So he's my real friend who finds my faults. So if you could communicate that. And communicate also that when we give one another feedback, we're giving one another valuable information from which we can grow, or by which we will grow, whatever the proper way of saying that is. And so now, if we can help others and ourselves also be in a position where when we get feedback, we take it as something valuable. I've learned something very valuable, and now I can use what I've learned to improve myself. I'm so glad that you told me, or I'm so glad this person pointed out this fault. Then that's just the proper way to be. So we should be that way also, if we're going to correct others. Then we should have that mentality. So Premasundar says, could praise hurt a person? Well, it's possible if 2,000 people praise you, but if one person does, I doubt it. Especially if that person's trying to encourage you, and you probably don't have to worry about 2,000 people praising you until you become a guru. And in that case, we have seen that 2,000 people praising somebody has gone to their head. So praise can, but then again, it's part of the process of devotional service to praise a superior, or especially praise the guru. So, I mean, if you feel you'd like to encourage somebody, but you're concerned that praising them would not be good for them, then you have to find another way to encourage them. You know, you can praise them in a mild way. You know, that was really good. I really like that. Someday, you're going to, I think, oh, here's one. This will answer your question. This is a good one. This devotee did a television show, and they sent either the audio or the video of the television show to Prabhupada, and he was really pleased. He was so pleased, he just showered praise on the devotee. And then he ended the praise by saying, someday you will become a preacher. I was like, what does that mean? So here he's praising him, but at the same time, he's not making him think he's the, you know, God's gift to the human race. He's saying, that was great, you were wonderful, and someday you'll become a preacher. And I guess the connotation is a preacher is way more than giving one good television show. And you should think, you're not even a preacher yet, you're far off, and someday, that was wonderful, and someday you'll become a preacher. Prabhu, that was a wonderful class. I could see someday you're going to be a really good Bhagavatam speaker. So, you know, you kind of balance out the praise and encourage him. Am I not a good barber? You know, someday you're going to be really good. You know, that's good for where you're at now. You know, but someday I could see you're on your way. I mean, you know, there may be other ways to do it. Bhakti and Carol. Also, I heard of the temple here that we should not act in hopes of receiving praise. So there's a question of praising those who donate money. Oh, what a question. Cat's out of the bag now. Praising those who donate money. Well, one of the things that we like to do, and I'm not saying it's wrong to do this, I think we should do it, is when people come to the temple and they do some service, we show appreciation for that service. By showing appreciation, they'll want to do more. For example, I was taught this wonderful technique when I learned how to do seminars. One of the things they taught us was when somebody asks a question, after you answer the question, and you make sure that they've understood and you've answered the question to their satisfaction, you tell the audience, let's give them a big hand, that was a great question. And then everybody claps. And so later on, when I took the training, or in the training course, they explained why. They said, often in school, someone will ask a question, and it won't be an intelligent question, or it may be a very stupid question. And sometimes the teacher may either say, that's a stupid question, or how could you ask such a question? That shows you didn't read the text, or you're not listening to what I say, or something like that. And so they said, if you do that, then that kid's not going to want to ask any more questions. Whereas if he asks a question which reflects the fact that he didn't hear what you said, and he's asking a question about what you just said a minute ago that he didn't hear, you could say, I just said that, aren't you listening, and get upset. Or you could answer the question, or you could ask someone in the audience to answer the question. And then you can applaud, say, hey, that's a great question. Let's give him a big hand. So he's now encouraged to ask more questions. So I think in terms of encouraging people in service, yeah, we appreciate their service. Thank you for donating. Thank you for cleaning the temple. We appreciate it. And generally, that kind of appreciation will have a good effect on people. It will encourage them to do more service. I don't think it's the kind of praise. I think appreciation is a little bit different than praise. And people can feel it, that you're not artificially appreciating. You're just praising them. You're not artificially praising them. You're appreciating them for the service they did. And that's good. And Prabhupada did that also. And, you know, and if you feel that would be bad for a particular person because they're so proud already, then you have to have another tactic. Maybe like avoid them, ignore them. Can praise hurt a person if it inflates their ego? Yeah, well, it's the same thing, you know. It can, it depends on the person. It definitely can. And too much praise to the person who can't handle it, yeah, it can hurt. But how will you know it's going to hurt the person? Perhaps we should distinguish praise from encouragement. So it's important that we encourage, and if we feel that praise would be detrimental, then we can encourage them in some way that falls short of the kind of praise that would hurt them. That's possible, right? Okay, Brenda Lee finally got the sound. Oh my God, you haven't heard anything I said. Well, it's all recorded, and you can get it by tomorrow or later tonight. Okay, Kremlin. I can often see that some of my students did not really make an effort in their work and thus need to print out that he or she could have done better. So constructive criticism. Yes. Yeah, and you go back to that point and show them how that oftentimes the best things they're going to learn in life are going to come from criticism or advice from other people of how they can do something better, or how what they did wasn't good. Now, if they understand the value of it, it won't hurt their false ego, and they'll understand that you're actually giving them a gift. So if we can help people understand we're giving them a gift, and say, I really like you and I really appreciate what you're doing, and could I offer you some little gift? You could say, instead of criticism, offer you a little jewel here that I think would really add to it. You know, I saw that you said this or did this, and I think it would have been, I think, you know, you could prosper more if you did it this way, and people would appreciate that. So, you know, you can do it that way. So it's very positive. And that's the, yeah, you have to judge people by a grade. But always encourage them. Yeah, you're doing well. Just, you know, apply yourself a little. May I suggest that you do this, do that? Yeah. Okay. Gayatri is with us. Wow, you came at 9 o'clock, Gayatri. Now we're ending. And you can't even hear the sound. That's even worse. Okay. And Vrinda just came. Where's everybody coming from? Okay. You see the bottom there, www.krishna.com, Mahatma there. You can go and in about 10 minutes, you're going to get the link to this class and all the other classes before this. Oh, PK Das is asking, how is it affecting our japa? He wants a detailed answer at 9 o'clock. Okay. First offense to the holy name is to blaspheme the devotees who've dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. And it's said that the holy name, Namprabhu, cannot tolerate offenses to his devotees. Love me, love my dog. Serve the devotees. We're serving Krishna. Krishna's pleased, more pleased when we serve his devotees than when we serve him. So if we offend his devotees, we're offending him. But particularly, it's offense to the holy name to offend his devotees. And offending his devotees creates a destructive, puts us on a destructive path and pollutes our consciousness. And ultimately, serious offenses destroy our creeper, uproots the creeper. So one of the 10 offenses is not to offend devotees. So, you know, one hand you may be chanting sincerely, one hand offending devotees, you're committing offense to the holy name, even though you're trying to chant. What does it say? If one is infested with the 10 offenses, even though one goes on chanting, for many years, many lifetimes, one will never reach the result, which is Krishna Prema. You may go on chanting, but you won't get Krishna Prema if you're offending Krishna's dear devotees. Now, it's very easy to defend devotees. Very, very easy to defend. It's very easy to offend devotees. That's the whole problem. It's so easy. You can do it in your sleep. You can do it when you don't even know you're doing it. You can do it with your eyes closed. You can do it doing a headstand. It's just come so natural to us as conditioned souls. So it's a problem in that we have to be on guard. Okay, Bhakti and Carol is going to share a thought with us. Her thought is as follows. Just a thought. Shouldn't service be done with Krishna in mind or to serve Krishna's devotees? Both, depending. Cooking for the deities, you should be thinking I'm cooking for the deities. Not that I'm cooking for the devotees. Even though you are cooking for the devotees. So, service to the devotees is service to Krishna. So, the best way to rectify an offense is to serve the person you offended. But, you know, offenses are caused by a certain mentality, a certain way of thinking. And if we change the thinking to appreciation of devotees, to try to as far as possible, encourage. You know, if we just go into the mode of, I want to encourage devotees, and we go into the mode mentality that if I have a fault-finding mentality, it's going to be difficult to encourage because I'm always going to see the negative. So if we go into this mood, I want to encourage devotees, and I want to just, you know, kind of break my addiction to fault-finding and just, you know, say, as Mickey Mouse, what was that? Not Mickey Mouse. The Mickey Mouse Club or the Mickey Mouse Show. They had a guy, I forget his name, because, you know, it was like 50 years ago. But I think his name, I don't know what his name is, Jimmy or something. They had this show, and he always said, as every show he always said, if you don't have something nice to say about someone, then don't say anything at all. So, you know, so we learned that before we were devotees. It's good advice. So I think that's the best, you know, the best attitude in general we can have. And in order to support that attitude, we have to have some sankalpa, intention, to not speak or hear ill of devotees. And you know, you find in the Shastra that many devotees took that vow. They would never hear criticism of devotees. And if there was criticism, they would leave that place. So it's a good practice. You know, why don't you try it next week and see how it goes? Just try to appreciate and encourage, and try and just, you know, make a vow. I'm not going to, you know, dwell on the faults of others. I'm only going to dwell on what they do well. You know how good you're going to feel if you do that? Oh my God, because you're going to be up here. You're not going to be down there with all that juicy stool, you know, stirring it up. Prabhu, come over here. We're churning up the ocean of stool. You want some? It's really juicy. You're going to be up here churning the ocean of nectar. Try it for a week. If you don't like it, you can go back to fault finding. You don't have to appreciate anybody. You don't have to encourage anybody. You can do that next week. But this week, just try to do the opposite. And report in and let me know how you feel. Let me know how it went. I think it'll transform you. Of course, you might say, well, I already do that. Then it wouldn't transform you because you're already transformed. But if that's not your, if you've never done it or not done it a lot, that would really help. Okay. Yeah. So you're not going to get the video. You're lucky if you get this video a year from now. But you can get the audio in 10 minutes, because it's being recorded. Do you realize that I love you so much? I went out and bought this recorder. Okay, let's see it. This recorder goes wherever I go. Here it is. Right, and I record everything on this just for you. Someday when I become famous, this recorder is going to be auctioned off for millions of dollars, right? And Prabhupada told me, he said, you'll never become famous. I wanted to be a famous musician. He said, you'll never become famous. So we don't have to worry about me becoming famous. Okay. No, Jiminy Cricket, I don't know. Was it? The head guy, anyway, they don't have anything nice to say. What should be done if you think something bad? Oh, cut your head off. That'll solve the problem. And you won't think anything bad anymore. That Prabhupada said that's the Mayavadi philosophy. The best way to stop thinking about something bad is to think about something. It starts with a G and ends with a D. Well, it could be think about God or think about something good. Of course, God is good, so you think about God, it's good. You know this whole idea, control your mind, don't think bad thoughts, better just think good thoughts. Just replace them with good thoughts. You're thinking something bad about a devotee. Okay, immediately think, what's good about this devotee? What can I appreciate? Think something positive, replace it. It works every time. As long as you can see something good, and hopefully you can. Unless you're like Duryodhana, who could not see anything good in anybody. But we hopefully are not that bad. Hopefully we can see good in everybody. Comes from the... now we're getting into old movies and... All right. I'm so happy to hear from you, Prabhu, to get all these great instructions churned out of your wonderful KC life. You are merciful to be with us. See, now I'm getting praised. I'm already falling down. And spend your precious time to help us. If I could practice any of these instructions, let all glories come to you. Just read the Prabhupada and you. Well, if you practice these instructions, then that will be the gift. That will be the gift to me, that I know that you've benefited. Thank you, Prema Sindhu. Prema Sindhu is swimming in the ocean of nectar. We just had 2 seminars this week in Ohio in which he attended. And he became very happy. I could see that. Manjesh, you're always so inspiring. I had to watch this whole class. Thanks for everything you said. I'll try my best to be here more often. Yes, Prema Sindhu. This was an amazing class. See, now I'm falling into total maya. I'm getting praised. This is terrible. I so appreciate these classes also, and I really do think about what incredible good fortune it is to have devotees to give these classes. I want to follow everything being taught. Thank you. I learned so much. Okay. Well, thank you all for praising me. I'm going to have to spend the whole next week overcoming this praise. I don't know if I'll be able to. I might fall down, but hopefully I'll crawl back up by next Tuesday. Okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna. We'll see you next Tuesday. Same time, same station. Hare Hare Bol.